Hello, Matt. Thank you very much for being here. That's it's very kind of you to make some time. We try to keep it short. I know you're busy. Tell us about what you want, like what you are doing now. I know some things are secret, some not, but what's your, because I don't actually know. I hear a lot from you on the podcast, but I don't really know what the fuck you are doing. So what are all the projects you are working on?
So first of all, thanks for having me. You know, this has been in the works for like a month now or something like that.
I can give you the story why this has taken so long afterwards, but please go on.
Yeah, I mean, no worries at all. I've been looking forward to it. I had someone who listened to my show reached out and was like, you should, you know, I really like your service, Relay, and you should go on their podcast. And he like set up the introduction, which is always the best, you know, because like I completely respected him. I trusted him. I had no idea who you guys were. You guys were not on my radar at all.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times like the European Bitcoin community is, you know, it's a little bit distinct, right, from the US Bitcoin community.
It is, man. Yeah, exactly. US and Europe is really separated. That's actually a pity.
But I looked at your site and, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to talking about your service because it seems pretty cool. I like the trade-offs you've made. But before we get there, so I'm Matt O'Dell. Recently, I've been focused on, I've launched a new show, Citadel Dispatch, which is a live weekly show on Tuesdays. It's really fun. It's just like unstructured. It's just a really good time. And then for the last 3 years, I've been doing this weekly show, another weekly show called Rabbit Hole Recap, which is like a news show. And that's also fucking awesome. Recently, I also just launched OpenSats, opensats.org, which is funding open source development. So we're going to take sats and we're going to spread it out and provide grants to not just Bitcoin devs, but also other like tertiary free open source projects, not like shitcoins. Yeah, no shitcoins, but it's going to be, you know, if for instance there was like an alternative to Tor that came out and they needed funding, yep, or open, yep, hardware or secure messaging, like these things that Bitcoiners are going to need, especially as the Bitcoin price continues to go up. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's a place to have an initiative where Bitcoiners are funding these projects so that we can live in that world we want to see. So that's completely 100% pass through. None of us are making any money. It's a 501c3, which means it's a nonprofit in the United States. So you get a tax deduction if you donate sats to us. And we're also going to have, you're going to be able to donate via credit card or debit card automatically. And we convert it to sats, and then our grants go out as sats. So you can stack like directly to open source development.
Stack funding.
About that.
Yeah. Very cool.
And then, dude, I have my hands everywhere. And then I've been consulting for Bitcoin Magazine. I've been helping their content team. The team that's been built over there over the last 6 months is extraordinary. They're fucking killing it now. We actually have like a proper Bitcoin publication. It's great to see. And the conference is about to happen in, mm-hmm, in a month. So I've been helping them with that. I'm going to be running a free open source section of the conference. That is just all going to be free open source projects, like all our favorite free open source projects. All the node teams will be there. We got Jamal from Polar is going to be there. They're going to be doing workshops and stuff. So I'm really excited about that.
I got my hands do what you like.
I love this shit. It's so good. Bitcoin is, I don't have to tell you, right? It's like, it's obsessive.
It basically brings me already to the first question. Like, why are you personally so involved into Bitcoin? Like, why can't you think and work on anything else than Bitcoin?
You know, before I found Bitcoin, I was super, I was pessimistic. I didn't have a good outlook on the world. Disillusioned. I didn't think the future would be very bright. And then I discovered Bitcoin and free open source software in general, and I saw this future that could be built that could mitigate the negatives I saw. It's like actionable change. It's something that like really is productive. Like, mm-hmm, people will just bitch and moan all the time and argue with their friends and family about politics and economics and all this shit. But like just using free open source tools using Bitcoin, like you can actually have change and you can just do it. You can do it yourself. You don't have to, you know, petition some big government or corporation to do it for you.
Yeah, because you studied economics, right?
I mean, kinda.
Kinda. Okay. So, but that, I think I heard somewhere your way was actually through economics, and then.
No. My co-host was through economics.
Oh, okay.
I was actually more of just. I'm more on the nerd side.
Okay.
But like, I also, you know, I went to business school. We had like a decent amount of economics education. And basically, when I discovered Bitcoin, it's like it was like everything they taught me was bullshit for the most part.
Right. That's why I thought like studying economics definitely makes you look into the future more disillusionized and more pessimistic, probably. And that's then where a lot of people find Bitcoin a very cool counterpart to the traditional economics, which just don't make sense. Like I remember when I sat in my economics class, I thought, this shit all doesn't make sense. Like just printing more and more money to stimulate the economy, but like where does this end? You can't really do this forever. Like what's the master plan here? I really don't get this. But with Bitcoin, it all makes kind of sense because it's like kind of a gold standard. And if you read Saifedean and everything, this just makes sense in the long run, you know.
We didn't learn about any of that in school. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is. One of the biggest things for me was 2008 when everything went to shit. I like kind of realized that was like the, you know, like the stepping stone that like showed me that people didn't really know what they were doing. That kind of everyone was just winging it. Right. And they're just kind of just like trying to figure it out on the fly. And like this idea of, oh, well, this is the way it's always been is not true. You know, it's in terms of history, like our current monetary system is what, like 50, 60 years old max. So it's really brand new and everyone's just winging it. And so I realized that, and then I was like, but that was negative to me. I was like, well, we're fucked. If everyone's just winging it, we're fucked. And then when I discovered Bitcoin, you know, 5 years later, 6 years later, I was like, oh, maybe we're not fucked.
So why is Bitcoin the solution to that? Or specifically, why is Bitcoin the best savings technology for you? Like what makes it this?
The crazy part about Bitcoin is that no one controls it. It's like absolutely, it's crazy that we have this distributed consensus that no one controls. I remember when I first discovered it, you know, my immediate thing was like, this is gonna be crushed. I thought it was such a good idea that I saw the need, but I was like, it's gonna get absolutely destroyed like everything else. And it still hasn't, right? That's crazy to me.
Yeah, because no human can control it and no human can, it's not prone to human error, right? That's probably why it's so, it's
because
so
you can't change it. So yeah. You can't make the error in the first place. It's just so hard to change. People think that's a negative, and I see the framing sometimes, but it's absolutely insane how robust the system is and how hard it is to change. And that's the value prop. To me, the value prop is that it's extremely hard to change. And as a result of that, it's highly censorship resistant.
That's funny. I never thought about that. The value prop of Bitcoin is actually that no humans are involved because exactly. Every error come from human in the end, right?
Yeah. And people talk about the supply, the you know, 21 million. 21 million doesn't matter if you can change it.
Right.
There's no such thing like there's no such thing as a fixed supply centralized shitcoin. That right. Supply can just be inflated at will, so
or fiat currency or whatever.
Or fiat's a centralized shitcoin, right?
Right. Not even gold is fixed. That's also something I learned the other day. Gold is scarce, but it's not fixed because you don't know how much there is in the world. You don't know how much there is on Mars, maybe in the universe. But the only asset you actually know there's only 21 Bitcoin, not more, is Bitcoin. You don't know how much, even though gold is one of the scarcest resources, you don't know how scarce actually it is. It could be that tomorrow we find like trillions of tons of gold somewhere, potentially, you know, theoretically.
Yeah, my favorite one's the asteroids, but I mean, kind of.
The gold asteroids.
I think the gold bugs roll their eyes at us when we say the asteroids thing, which is why I like that one.
Yeah. Gold bugs is another, let's do another podcast on that. But like, so... One question from the community was, and it's actually the guy who introduced us. It's Satoshi Baggins, who, by the way, works for us since this month. He's now actually on our payroll, which is very, very, very cool. He's in the team. And he asked, so why are you buying expensive drinks instead of stacking sats? In other words, or that's how I interpret it, should people like lower their life standards to a point where they can just basically stack the maximum of their salary in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think the best strategy, and I've never been someone for leverage, is to be as frugal as possible now while Bitcoin's still cheap, and literally pour as much money as possible into Bitcoin and stacking sats, while still having a cushion so that you don't have to panic sell if like the price falls down. You have to have enough to live.
Right.
If you're making fiat, if you're making Bitcoin, then it's all coming in as Bitcoin, and then you just try and spend as little as possible. But if you're making fiat and the goal is you got your fiat paycheck and it's coming into your bank account and you're using a service like Relay or something to automatically stack a portion of your salary into sats, the easiest way to increase that percentage is to lower your expenses. And I 100% agree with that. I'm kind of frugal. I try my best, but
Are you still buying expensive drinks?
Yeah, I mean, but I justify it because I buy expensive bottles and then I consume them in my own house instead of going to a bar, which would be considerably more expensive. But I do admit that it is a very high time preference thing that I do in terms of my drink choices. life is short. You know, you got to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, YOLO as well.
Good question.
Yeah, Baggins has always good questions. Is it that made me think? So you said if you're making fiat, which is the majority now of people are making fiat, like almost 100% of their salary probably is in fiat, and then they use a service like us or Swan Bitcoin, for example, in the US to stack a percentage. And I think in the last couple of years, this percentage grew. So people are stacking more of their sats. Do you think that, and then you talked about the other end of the continuum where people actually, like Andreas Antonopoulos, or like people earn 100% of their salaries in Bitcoin, and then they kind of reverse stack probably just the fiat that they need for everyday use, right? And so do you think that this development will continue so that right now people stack a little bit of Bitcoin, but in some decades maybe they will have only Bitcoin and just convert a little bit into fiat, you know what I mean?
But then you won't even need fiat. Fiat will just be dead at that point. You'll just spend your Bitcoin.
Yeah, at one point, right? But then do you think this development will just gradually...
Is there a transition period?
Yeah.
Right? I think, well, first of all, so my fiat, the fiat I like calling it like my fiat revenue, because I have like a bunch of different ways that I'm bringing in USD per week. I take half of that and I just automatically put it into Bitcoin, period.
Cool.
I auto stack. So then after that, I'll also add more if I'm feeling, particularly frugal in a particular, in a week, or I've covered my expenses and I have some more left over. I'll throw it in, on a dip or whatever. I think what people don't realize is the move to getting paid in Bitcoin directly from your employer is going to be a lot quicker than people think. Like, I could easily see, in a 5-year time frame, 10-year time frame, that happening. Because the way to look at it is these worse economies, when they like dollarize, when they have their currency go out of control. We saw this in like Ecuador. You see this in like Zimbabwe. And what happens is the people switch to the better currency first. Like if you're an enterprising businessman, like you're going to keep all your stuff in US dollars. You're not going to keep it in, the Bolivar or something while it's losing value, right? And your business is going to do better because you do that. And then if you already have dollars, you're just going to pay your employees in dollars because that's what you have. That's what you operate your business in. So I think, you know, what we're gonna see is we're gonna see a lot of businesses switch, and you know, money's a crazy thing. Like, I hope I'm wrong, but like, I could totally see these things spiraling out of control, like rather quickly. Rather, it's like once you pull the blinds off, and people are like, wait, what is backing the U.S. dollar? What's backing the euro? I feel like it could just happen really, really quick. And then it's like, who wants to be caught holding that? No one wants to be holding, you know, that horrible money that's just losing value.
It's also an exponential spiral. Like it maybe, you know, you print money, print money. And for a couple of years or decades, nothing really happens. But then because it grows exponentially, like virally, then at one point, once you know your feet are wet, it's too late, because then next thing you know, it's already, the water is already up here, and next thing you know is you're drowning.
Yeah, I think it can happen way quicker than people
think. That's true. And the thing with paying employees, for example, in Bitcoin, is probably, as you say, it's possible already, and it's happening already. Like MicroStrategy, for example, pays some portion of their salaries, I think, at least to the board members in Bitcoin. Here in Switzerland, there are a couple of companies, us included, that pay a portion of their salaries in Bitcoin, and I think that's
so much easier, right? Yeah. It's like, who wants to deal with the wiring and like setting up bank accounts and all this stuff? Like, if you can just get paid, I would prefer it any day of the week. I would prefer it, but like really getting paid in Bitcoin, not, you know, doing KYC and having the employer like send a wire to a company that automatically switches into Bitcoin for me and then pays me in Bitcoin. That's not what I'm talking about. That has almost the same amount of friction. Yeah. But if I can just give you a Bitcoin address and sign it with my PGP key, because I'm a remote worker, and you can just pay me, or my Lightning pub key, and you can just key send me every 2 weeks, and it just comes right into my Lightning wallet. That seems like the ideal to me in terms of a remote work environment, especially if you're crossing borders. You know, you can hire an employee anywhere in the world, and you don't have to deal with international wires or any of that shit.
Yeah, and especially the more corporations or companies invest in Bitcoin and also get their revenue in Bitcoin. For example, we get all our revenue in Bitcoin, right? And we get some investor money in fiat, exactly. So we have still both. But once companies get their revenue in Bitcoin, it's obviously easier to pay their employees as well in Bitcoin. That was another question actually from Twitter, from our community, is, can Bitcoin be corporation friendly, meaning like surveilled, regulated, and all that kind of stuff, but still be censorship resistant, private, and like the crypto anarchy vision that we had in the beginning? Is this, or can we do both, or is it an either or?
You know, I think we're gonna have to do both. I think it's going to be corporate and surveilled no matter what. So, you know, it needs to be built in a way that people can, you know, use the tools to achieve privacy regardless, achieve censorship resistance regardless. And there's always been this interesting divide, you know, about the number go up side versus the censorship resistance side. You know, store of value versus censorship resistant digital e-cash. And my dog does not like that.
Sounds like e-cash.
But what people don't realize is that you need them both together. Like, you can't have one without the other. The ultimate thing about Bitcoin is we need to have this bearer. We need to have this digital bearer asset that has value, which is, you know, the sats, which is Bitcoin. If we can't, in the past, when people have tried to make digital e-cash, censorship resistant digital e-cash, it's always pegged to something. And you see this with the stable coins, like Tether, you know, it's they're supposedly holding US dollars in some bank account somewhere, and they give you a token. That can never be truly censorship resistant, because you can just pressure them, you pressure who's ever holding the peg, and you have to trust who's ever holding that peg. The cool part about Bitcoin and what makes it so robust is that the token itself has a floating free market value. So you need this token with this value, and that value, because if it doesn't have value, then you can't send value, period. So you need that value, and that value pays the miners in a trust minimized way, which secure the network. So if you already have this token that has value, you need it to at least stay stable. I would say. But ultimately, that's really hard to do. So I think with Bitcoin, the balance is that it's designed to just keep going up. Like over time, it should just keep going up in value. Because if it starts going, if it goes down in a sustained long, you know, period, then you won't be able to send any value anymore. So, or pay the miners, your security budget, everything goes down. So you need that. But at the same time, good money needs to be able to be spent, because if it can't be spent, then what's the value? It shouldn't have value either. So I think they kind of work off of each other. Having like corporations come in, even though they have completely different priorities for us than us or than me, you know, they support the other side because they're adding investment into the system and it's going up into the system. And then they don't realize, but the censorship resistant folks, who they often will think is their enemy, are actually protecting their interests because they're making sure that Bitcoin is remaining a robust, you know, censorship resistant system.
And that's a beautiful thing as well. You can use Bitcoin in this regulated way. Like if you're a MicroStrategy or another a big corporation, then you will need, or a hedge fund or whatever, or a bank. If you're a regulated entity, you're on the stock market or whatever, then you just need to use Bitcoin in a regulated way. And that's okay, as long as there are the tools for people like you, like Giacomo Succo, like all these, privacy oriented people, that if they have to use like the tools like CoinJoin or whatever, that they can then use it in this privacy oriented way, then everybody's fine, right?
We need both. It goes back to the previous statement, right? Like if we could stop the corporations from being a part of it, or if the corporations could stop, you know, sovereign Bitcoiners from being a part of the network, then there's no value, right? Mm-hmm. Like the whole point is no one controls it. Bitcoin's for enemies.
Yep. So there's a lot of institutional money and attention coming in, and that you basically already answered that. Is it good or bad for Bitcoin? Basically.
You know, I guess, you know, I there's nuance to this, and you know, with the companies coming in, there's greater attention being brought onto us. I think that everyone likes, you know, when the number goes up, but I think it's important to not to get blinded by it and not be skeptical of new participants when they come in, right? They're not all participants that come in are going to have Bitcoin's best interests at heart. And the incentives, especially for very, very large regulated companies, might not necessarily be as aligned game theoretically with Bitcoin's incentives. So like one of the beauty things about Bitcoin is that anyone who holds Bitcoin has an incentive to see it succeed. Right. But I think there is an incentive that's on the side, like a side incentive for these large regulated companies to kind of just make it a super hyper regulated thing. And just because they don't think long term enough, by the time they realize they've destroyed it, which is the incentive, like the incentive is they shouldn't act against their own best interest. They shouldn't hurt the value of Bitcoin. By the time they realize it, it would be, you know, we'd be really damaged at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's important, I think, for us to keep them honest, like people who can see more long term, to keep them honest and make them aware of slippery slopes that we could be going down. You know, I don't want to see a world, I don't want to see a world where you can't withdraw Bitcoin from regulated exchanges.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of CEOs of large companies and stuff that think that's completely fine future for us to live in. You can't withdraw your stocks, so why should you be able to withdraw your Bitcoin? And so things like that is something that I think it's important to have a very vocal, educated, you know, sovereign Bitcoin community that keeps them honest. And that's the check and balance, right?
Yeah, but then with Bitcoin, because it's an open network and because everybody can participate in the way he or she wants to, then that's what happens, that large corporations try to overregulate and so on. But in the end, the user decides, right, in which way he or she uses Bitcoin. Do I want to use Bitcoin with something like Coinbase, where I don't have the keys, where I want to do this trade-off? Or do I want to use Bitcoin with CoinJoin and Wasabi wallet and all that kind of stuff so that I can get more privacy and more self-control. In the end, it's about the user, right? So that's another question we had. Actually, also from one of our team members, from our UI guy, Bitcoin Labrador. How do you think we can and should improve Bitcoin privacy? Like not in our personal use, but in the network and software upgrades, maybe on chain or with, you know, Lightning or whatever. Like how can and should we improve Bitcoin privacy on the network?
You know, I think we have to. I think we have to keep improving the privacy guarantees of Bitcoin, whether that's the protocols, you know, whether that's Bitcoin main chain protocol or layer two protocols like Lightning or Liquid, or like state chains are looking really fucking cool. And some of those, you know, are going to require little updates little updates would help. Like Taproot's a perfect example. Like Taproot, kind of on its own doesn't really help with privacy that much, but you mix it with something like Lightning. And because of its trait where the multi-sig look like you can't tell if it's a multi-sig, a single sig, or how much multi-sig. Right now on chain you can see if it's like a 3 of 5 or 2 of 2 or 4 of 7. And Lightning is a 2 of 2, so when you see a 2 of 2, for the most part you like know it's Lightning. So you mix something like that with Lightning and there's all these different things you can do on Lightning. So I think it's imperative that people realize, to me I think Bitcoin's biggest weakness, its biggest attack vector, is the privacy side. And it's not on the protocol. Like the network, I think, is extremely state resistant. Like I think if a large government wanted to shut down the Bitcoin network, they'd have a lot of trouble doing it. But I think the actual users are vulnerable on a state level. And we see this, you know, in like Turkey, for instance, there's a crackdown, there's an authoritarian government, there's a crackdown. And what are they going to do? They can't take down the Bitcoin network because that is state resistant. So they're going to identify users in Turkey and they're going to make examples of the very big ones for sure. And then maybe they'll round up smaller ones because it's all on this public ledger that's going to last forever. And a lot of people are using KYC exchanges and stuff like that. So I think it's very important for us for people to focus on improving privacy and improving user education in terms of privacy. With Bitcoin, it's extremely difficult to change. So Bitcoin main chain is extremely difficult to change. So I'm optimistic on these layer two things, like I said, Lightning, Liquid, state chains. Hopefully these apps, you know, these, we've seen great strides with the CoinJoin applications now. Which is like an app-based method of trying to deal with it. But I think ultimately what people really don't realize is, you know, privacy using Bitcoin right now, if privacy using Bitcoin right now is not only difficult, but it's extremely expensive compared to using it not privately. And when fees go up, which I expect fees to go up, if we don't increase, you know, if my expectation is that the block space will remain, you know, finite and scarce, and there won't be an increases to it as we saw in 2017. If that's the case and demand goes up, which we expect it to do, fees are gonna go up a lot. And when those fees go up, you know, we saw it like temporarily because hash got pulled last week or 2 weeks ago. When fees go up, they go up quick and it gets really, really expensive to use CoinJoin and use, you know, Bitcoin more privately. People are incentivized to reuse addresses and combine their UTXOs. So that's why Lightning is kind of Lightning and Liquid and state chains are kind of where I've been looking, because it doesn't even matter. You know, it's nice if we have little improvements on the base layer to help facilitate even better privacy on the layer twos. But ultimately, I think most people in 5-10 years are never going to even hit the main chain.
Exactly.
Like I think they're going to get onboarded directly onto Lightning or Liquid or some layer two that I can't even comprehend right now. And they're going to live there for like their whole life. And then maybe if they hit like a massive sum of money or something and they get life-changing wealth, then they'll move that to the main chain for safekeeping, so, you know, to pass from generation to generation. But I think most people like will just never hit the main chain.
We are going to talk to our kids, you know, and tell the stories how we send each other 10 bucks in Bitcoin on the main chain.
Exactly. Ridiculous. It'll be insane to them.
Yeah, right. That's funny. You touched on the next question already. What do you think of address reuse? So you said the address reuse and consolidation.
I mean, it's horrible. Like, do you guys reuse addresses?
Yes, unfortunately, because of
you gotta fix that.
Yeah, it's illegal. It's a legal thing because if we get one signature, we can then prove with that the sender of the fiat money is also the receiver. So we kind of
so you make them sign their address so it's whitelisted, and then
we actually do that in the background. The first one, when he does the order, the user, then we do that. We combine this in the background, and then it works automatically. User doesn't have to do anything, and it stacks on this address. If the user would want to have an address changed, then every week he would need to come to the app and sign something. But we're working on making
that. What you could do is you can have them. Well, first of all, by the way, this is like a perfect example of why Bitcoiners need to remain vigilant, right? Because, you know, and I'll be very sensitive here because I know it's a sensitive topic, but these companies that are operating in these space, including yourselves, have to deal with all this regulatory burden. And it's kind of, you know, by you, it's a little bit better, but, you know, we especially start in the UK. It changes very quick, and you like don't know what to expect. And a lot of times it can put your users at risk, and you need to like constantly just try to do your best, because otherwise you'll go out of business. You just won't even be able to operate. One thing to consider, and I just kind of love that we're just like brainstorming on here, because I've never used your, I can't use your product because I'm American. You could have them sign an XPub or a paynim, like a BIP47 payment code. Yeah. And then that way you could still generate new addresses, but you would still know that it was their whitelisted one. So on chain, at least, and you would have to tell them basically, especially if you did the XPub approach, you'd have to tell them like, dedicate this wallet only to your Relay withdrawals, because you'd be able to see every address in that wallet, even though they're creating new addresses. But at least on chain, it would look better, because when you reuse an address on chain, if I see an address on a Block Explorer or something that every week is just getting like 100 euros worth of Bitcoin, like I know exactly what's happening there. There's a user one of these stacking services that's just constantly stacking every week. And then if that user ever pays someone, it's easier for them to, you know, look through the chain at where they went. And that's where like you really need stuff like CoinJoin after the fact. Yeah. If you are using a service that is reusing addresses. But if you do like XPubs or paynim BIP47 payment codes,
absolutely. I also think XPub is the way to go, and it is actually in Swiss law. This would theoretically be legal. It would be okay, you know, the signing mechanism and the proof that the sender is also receiving, this would work. So it's legal, but it's not audible yet. So you need to audit this thing,
right?
And the way we do it with one address, this is auditable. Like the audit companies in Switzerland, they know, you know, they can check that. But the XPub thing, they don't understand it enough yet so that they can check.
It's
so
we still above. Need
to, yeah, we kind of need to work together or educate an audit company, which we will do in the next couple of months, so they understand that this is actually okay from a legal perspective. And once this is accepted by them, then it's auditable, and then we can do it. So we're definitely working on it with good input. Yeah, I think XPub is the way to go, because it's the best compromise from a privacy, but also from a user perspective, because the user just has to export an XPub, put it into the app one time, and then that's it.
And then it's automatically a new address every withdrawal.
Yep.
The other thing is like with Lightning, you know, you can sign with a pub key, and then the node never changes.
Yeah, that's obviously on the roadmap as well. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Good input.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, this stuff, I'm hoping that some sane governments push back more on this stuff, because I think, I don't know, it does kind of feel to me like it's the step before they start saying you're just not allowed to withdraw, period. So we'll see where that goes, at least in some places. Like there was a little bit of time there where I thought in the UK that you just weren't going to be allowed to withdraw, period.
Oh, I mean,
and I still think that's in the cards. So we'll see.
Obviously, you should not rely on any custodial law, because that can happen overnight. And that's that. Yeah. And then we are at the same point where it was 2008, 2009, or 2010 in Greece, where people go to their ATMs and they can withdraw $20 a day, not more. Like they have this limit, and then they're fucked
because
they
don't actually.
Yeah, it happens. It happened overnight. People were. I used to work this day. I remember when this happened. This change. I used to work at a Swiss bank, and we had some Swiss expats living in Greece that were customers, or some Greece family members that had like connections to our bank. And they kind of freaked out and called their Swiss relatives to send money over there, because they couldn't withdraw their money anymore. They had like maybe 50K on their bank account, but they could only withdraw $20 or $50 per day. And that's the consequence if you don't own your money, if you give your money into custody somewhere. So that's also why, for example, we and like a lot of wallet providers obviously only encourage non-custodial ownership of Bitcoin, because then that cannot happen. It's actually your money and not the bank's money. So maybe let's change subject a little bit. What are different, like you're a guy who does a lot of things in the Bitcoin space. So what would you advise? What are different and creative ways people can contribute to this like kind of Bitcoin revolution? Not only maybe, I mean, obvious things are like coders can help code on like all these open source protocols. But what else? Like what can normal people do to engage in the Bitcoin community and bring this whole development forward?
Well, like I had like a doctor reach out to me and he was like, what can I do for Bitcoin or whatever? I was like, you could just be a doctor and like also just learn about Bitcoin and stack sats. You know, you contribute to open source software. I think people have, and it's ironic coming from me because I spend so much time like directly in Bitcoin land. People have this desire to just jump in head first. And sometimes, especially in the beginning, it's not really advantageous for you to do that, because, you know, there's not necessarily a plethora of good Bitcoin jobs and Bitcoin paying jobs. And you probably already have skills, and Bitcoin price is going to go up substantially. And then it's going to go down substantially. Every cycle this happens. And if you're not financially secure in an 80% downturn, you know, bear market, you're probably going to end up with way less Bitcoin than if you have a job that's completely separate from Bitcoin. So I would say, first and foremost, I think what people should focus on is, I like the metaphor, you know, when you're on an airplane and they have the air masks come down, right? And they say, if you have a child next to you, you should put on your mask first, and then you're supposed to put on the child's mask. And I think it's the same thing with Bitcoin. Like the first step should be focus on yourself, focus on improving your understanding of Bitcoin, get comfortable with the tools, get comfortable with the nuances of properly using Bitcoin and the privacy implications and the custody implications and the security implications, using hardware wallets, using multi-sig, using Lightning, all of these things. It's a fucking huge rabbit hole, right? And there's tons and tons of learning to be done. And you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your future family to get that done. And then once you've done that, once you've started to get more of a, I don't think anyone can fully understand Bitcoin, but when you start more of an understanding, then, you know, start seeing, you know, what little things you can be doing within the community. You know, one thing I personally really love is meetups. I think, you know, a lot of places in the world still have COVID restrictions, but we're starting to see them let up. And with that means Bitcoin meetups are coming back. And there are definitely, you know, security considerations that people should consider. You know, don't put yourself in a vulnerable situation. Don't talk about how much Bitcoin you own. Don't ask someone how much Bitcoin they own. And be discreet when possible. But I think these Bitcoin meetups are fucking awesome. Like we have one in New York that I've been going to for the last 4 years. And I've just met so many great people, and it's just a really good way to get your feet wet.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good answer. Like, just get involved. Start small and get involved, and then you will see where it takes you and how much engagement you will have. But you will have some contribution, even if it's only stacking sats like $50 a week or something. That's already a contribution. It's like a donation to the network, right?
Yeah, and cool. I think a lot of people, like, the where you really start, right, is you're like the annoying Bitcoin guy of your friends and family, right? So they know, like, you're the one who's into Bitcoin, and if they have questions, they're going to come to you, right? So that's why it's important that you already have your mask on so you can help them.
Because then you're automatically doing education, which is a big thing where I think most of the people can have some contribution, like starting a blog, starting a podcast, or even just, organize webinars, or even just talking to friends about it, right? So education is definitely one big thing where a lot of people can contribute. So we have a lot of obviously newcomer users, and one of the first questions always is, okay, so I'm set up with a savings plan, or I bought some Bitcoin. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to, are there other currencies? Do you also offer Ethereum? Do you offer altcoins? And then there's this DeFi craze right now, which is obviously going crazy. What do you think? What's your view on this DeFi and altcoin craze? What would you answer to these people? And will there maybe similar things on Bitcoin? Because a lot of people think, oh, Bitcoin is so boring. Like, you can only do all these crazy stuff on ETH and all these sushi and whatever crazy coins. Like, and Bitcoin is boring, right? So what's your view on this whole craze that's happening right now, the DeFi altcoin craze? And how do you think will these things develop, the ones that make sense on Bitcoin as well?
You guys are Bitcoin only, right?
Yeah.
Well, first thing is what I like about that better about this cycle than last cycle is there's a bunch of Bitcoin only places you can send people. Like, it used to be you just send them to like Coinbase and they would just get fucking, they were fucked. They never had a chance. They were just like, they would open the door in Coinbase and they were just throwing all this shit right at them. So I feel like when that's your intro, you're just automatically screwed. And for a lot of people, I think what happens is, like, you can tell people, all these shit coins, all these tokens are a bad investment compared to Bitcoin. They're going to trend to zero in terms of Bitcoin long term. But ultimately, they're going to have to touch the stove. They're going to have to burn themselves, usually, before they realize this. And I think one of the cool parts about Bitcoin is that it's open, permissionless, and it's free open source software. So there's always going to be forks and scams and all these different shit. One of the main value props to Bitcoin is gambling, right? Is gambling in different trust levels, different trust trade-offs of gambling. We saw that in the beginning with Satoshi Dice. The whole shitcoin trading market is basically one big Bitcoin casino. And DeFi is just kind of the latest, it's like the latest iteration of that. They took it to like a whole nother level. But in a lot of ways, I think it's almost a Bitcoin use case, even if it's on other chains, because you can move from Bitcoin to them relatively easy. And I think ultimately none of them are threats to Bitcoin. I don't think they compete with Bitcoin. I think long-term Bitcoin is king. I think long term everything is going to trend to zero in terms of Bitcoin. And I'm not even just saying, altcoins, tokens. I'm talking about real estate. I'm talking about, major company stocks, valuations and stuff. I'm talking about, if you're going to buy a car or something, like, it'll always, like, I believe Bitcoin is a super scarce store of value. And it's the most scarce thing we've ever seen, and people don't realize that. So it should just constantly go up in value. It'll have hills, So I think what happens is if you want to try and speculate short term, I just tell them power to them. I tell them they're going to lose their money. I tell them long term, you're better off just, most people can't trade, and these things are going to go up and down and then probably stay down, most of them. So you should just do the dumb thing, the simple thing, and just stack sats long-term responsibly. And I think if they don't listen to me, which they don't, in the bull run, they're not going to, you just let them learn their lesson. Like in the bull run, people don't realize everyone thought, you know, a lot of people thought like this bull run was going to be different. There wasn't going to be like the shitcoin. The scams always pump the hardest, and that's always what they're interested in. They come in and they just immediately to ask, like they ask the token names I'm being asked for in my text messages from my college friends and stuff. I've never even heard of them. You know, like I don't even like, what are you asking me? Like, it's ridiculous. And then I tell them just focus on Bitcoin and they're just going to do it. I know they're just going to do it anyway.
Shiba coin is the latest. It's the latest.
Yeah. Ones. What the hell is that? I think that's just an Ethereum token, right? They just created a token.
It is a meme coin of a meme coin.
Ridiculous.
So it's a stupid. Yeah, it's the Dogecoin is a stupid copy of Bitcoin that has no development since years. And it's just stupid. And then they make a meme coin out of that stupid copy of a stupid copy. And both are pumping as fuck. But yeah, I think it's a very interesting consideration. It's like you have some money, you earn some money, and then you go to a casino and you take a part of this money. If you're like crazy gambler, you take a lot of your money, even take out loans maybe, and put it into some shitty tokens and you play roulette with it. And maybe you lose all the tokens. Or you get a lot of tokens back, and if you convert it back to your money at the right point, then you can make a profit. But most of the people don't. Most of the people just lose their assets.
Yeah, most people lose money, and the fucked up part is that there's like a select few that basically don't disclose the trade offs and use their position of power to pump these things, and the unsuspecting noobs get absolutely wrecked. But to me, I don't think it's a threat to Bitcoin. I think it's, you know, it's a threat to the new users who get like pulled into the schemes.
Yeah. But then they learn. It's the story of most. Like they start with Bitcoin. They enter the space with Bitcoin, and then they do some journey to altcoins, ICOs, IEOs, what the fuck all these things was, like DeFi, whatever. They burn. They burn themselves, and then they come back to Bitcoin. Usually.
That's usually the trend.
Which is good. People need to learn. That's how kids learn. They fall. They fall like a couple of times before they can walk, right?
No one's gonna hold your hand in Bitcoin land. You have to do it yourself.
Right. Yeah, I lost a lot of money with that. That's okay. So speaking of personal money, and that's the last question. My favorite question I ask all the guests. How much of your total wealth do you hold in Bitcoin, percentage-wise?
It's over 95%.
Holy shit. Basically, yeah. You just have a small account with some box on it for coffee.
I have like like my spending, my expenses and stuff. Like I have a checking account with my regular spending, but
no other,
you know, Bitcoin is one of those beasts. Like you either have 100% Bitcoin portfolio allocation, or Bitcoin just pumps to you having 100% portfolio allocation. Like you don't have a choice. Like as much Bitcoin as you have, it's going to dominate your portfolio at some point, or you sold. You know, so I not only do I have the majority of my net worth in Bitcoin, but I spend the majority of my time in Bitcoin land. So I've like leveraged up in that way. But I still feel FOMO. I feel like I don't have enough, you know, it's a never ending desire to accumulate more Bitcoin.
Right. And I think it doesn't matter how much Bitcoin you have. If you have 0.1, you always want to get to 0.2. If you have, you know, you always want to get a whole coiner, and then you want to get 2, and then you want to get 10. And I heard from this guy, so I know a guy who works at one of the first crypto banks in Switzerland, and they have like the biggest Bitcoin kind of clients. I mean, if you have so many Bitcoins that you want to store them with a bank, or at least part of them. Right. So he told me about his biggest client, and he started mining 2011 with this laptop. And so it starts this kind of story, right? And this guy owns apparently 96,000 Bitcoin. And this is, it's a couple of billions. It's a multi-billionaire. Yeah, and this guy feels FOMO because he will never be able to get to 100,000.
He was short. Like,
try to buy 4,000 Bitcoins now. He doesn't have the money to buy 4,000 Bitcoin. So he's never going to get 6-digit in Bitcoin, you know, and that's the FOMO he gets. So this is it's just all very relative.
Yeah, I mean, well, fuck that guy. Good for him. I'm happy for him.
Fuck that guy. That's a good last word. Thank you very much, Matt. It was really amazing. Very, very cool. Hopefully you will be back on the show, and hopefully at one point you will be able to try out our service, so we could also talk about that a little more. We have the APK on the website, so you can maybe try this out. It should work, but otherwise we will at some point we will come to come.
But you don't support US customers, right?
No, unfortunately not. We can only support Europe because of SEPA network and euro. Fair. And Swiss francs, that's the only currencies we do. And I mean, you guys have great services as well, like Swan and the River Financial and stuff like that. But at one point, I think we will figure it out and come to the States as well. Say hi.
Well, anyway, Julian, thank you for having me. I enjoyed this. Are you coming to Miami by any chance for
Bitcoin? Unfortunately not, no, because of COVID regulations, it's too much of a hassle. I would need to spend 2 months in a clean 2 weeks in a clean country before. Yeah, right. Are you going?
There's a bunch of people having like a mini conference in Cancun right before. Like that makes it like such stupid regulation. It makes no
sense. So stupid. But yeah.
Well, that's a shame. But hopefully I'll meet you in person sometime soon.
Absolutely. Let me know whenever you're in Europe, and I.
Do you do any European conferences? My favorite one is Riga.
Oh yeah.
Baltic Honey Badger. That one's always a good time. 2020 canceled, but I think they're gonna do another big one.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, once they open, I'm sure there will be a lot of big meetups or conferences or whatever. Also in Switzerland, there used to be some cool conferences in Switzerland, but right now everything is fucked. But yeah, man, absolutely. Like we definitely see each other online or offline. Take care, man, and I wish you the best of luck with all your projects. Keep going.
Cheers. Likewise.
Peace out. Cheers. Bye.